From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, March 3rd. I'm Abby Larico. Voters in St. Louis will go to the polls tomorrow to vote in primaries for mayor and comptroller. Some will also select their general election candidates for aldermen. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman breaks down the municipal ballot coming up after this news on The Gateway. The discovery of bird flu at the St. Louis Zoo has prompted the closure or temporary relocation of several exhibits. Access to some animals, habitats, and experiences will be limited until further notice, with increased safety protocol to protect other animals. The zoo's website says that includes the closure of the birdhouse and shortened outdoor hours for the penguin and puffin area. This all comes after a duck found dead in a lake at the zoo tested positive for avian influenza. The risk of bird flu to humans remains relatively low, but several state and local agencies are monitoring the situation. Last month, nearly 400,000 chickens were affected by the virus in Missouri. More than 25,000 federal employees live and work in the St. Louis metropolitan area. If the Trump administration continues cutting the federal workforce, some economists say that will have a trickle-down effect on the area economy. STLPR's Will Bauer reports.
University of Missouri St. Louis economics professor Ann Winkler believes the Gateway Arch National Park serves as a good example. If job cuts affect the arch, that could affect tourism, and less tourism could mean less business for restaurants. Winkler says St. Louis isn't Yosemite, but the arch is important to the local economy.
The spillovers and linkages with respect to the federal workforce are probably much bigger than an individual might think.
But other economists say layoffs may only affect 10% of the federal workforce. In the grand scheme of things, they say the region losing 2,500 jobs may not mean economic turmoil locally. One thing the economists do agree on, it's hard to predict with so few details. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The city of St. Louis is not currently pursuing cash payments for reparations. It's one of the recommendations made in the St. Louis Reparations Commission report released last October, but St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones says such a program would be unconstitutional. Jones says she's still reviewing the report, and she doesn't yet have a plan for how her administration could repay Black St. Louisans for the city's role in years of slavery and discrimination. However, she says the city's economic justice plan is already repairing the harm for some communities of color in St. Louis.
Through the Economic Justice Action Plan, we've been able to address a lot of the things that the report raises. We are intentionally investing in neighborhoods that have been left behind.
The 124-page report includes several other recommendations for restorative justice, including establishing housing grants, expanding access to low-cost health services, and creating a fund for victims of police violence. Illinois Republican lawmakers are renewing their calls to nix state health care programs for adults without legal immigration status. An audit found the programs cost the state about $898 million in their first 3 years. Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration had initially estimated that cost to be $350 million. The audit also found more than 6,000 people enrolled in the programs had a Social Security number. Others did not meet age requirements. Senate Minority Leader John Curran has long railed against the programs.
While this was a good press pop for a governor trying to get more recognition on the national stage, he was unable to be trusted by the taxpayers of Illinois to actually manage and run this program properly.
Governor Pritzker said the report is evidence that there's, quote, an awful lot of people out there who need coverage. A bill that would prohibit anti-Semitic discrimination in Missouri's public K-12 schools and higher education institutions is moving through the state legislature. House Bill 937 is sponsored by State Representative George Haruza and House Speaker John Patterson. Haruza spoke last week about the bill at a hearing by the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development.
We've got to make sure that our Jewish students can feel safe and comfortable going to school, and they can have their education and not worry about what might happen if they go to class.
The bill looks to the definition of anti-Semitism defined by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance and mandates the integration of that definition into student, faculty, and employee codes of conduct. An annual competition for elementary through high school students in Missouri is aimed at reducing the amount of trash on the state's roadways. The No More Trash Contest is underway now and runs through March 14th. Those who enter decorate a 30-gallon or larger trash can to display at their school or in their community. Darren Hamelink is the state maintenance director for the Missouri Department of Transportation, which hosts the contest. He says MoDOT is spending a lot of state money and resources picking up trash.
We used to average $6 to $7 million a year in Missouri. Now it's double that. It's roughly $13 million a year.
While educational campaigns like this one can help, they're just one solution to a problem that requires several. Hamelink says some littering can be prevented if people would simply secure their loads before heading out on the roads. February packed in more local restaurant openings than closings, according to our running tab. New spots include Good Stranger Coffee Shop on Cherokee Street, Great Heart Brewing in Olivet, and Irby Farms, a mushroom-focused cafe on St. Charles Main Street. Pieces Board Game Bar is back open in a new location in Soulard, and Side Project Pizza is filling the void left by Pizza Champ in Maplewood. City SC's new season also brought new players in the concession offerings at Energizer Park, such as Damn Fine Hand Pies, Pappy's Smokehouse, and Ballyards. Among the February closures were some longtime St. Louis institutions, Mom's Deli in Lindenwood Park, and Tony's Restaurant in Clayton. Find our list of more local restaurant openings and closings at stlpr.org. Voters in St. Louis will head to the polls tomorrow in the municipal primary. I sat down with St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman, who's been talking to the candidates ahead of this election. Rachel, remind us what city voters will see on the ballot.
There are four primaries altogether for the mayor, comptroller, and two seats on the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Approval voting means that in the primary, people can support however many candidates they want, and then the top two vote-getters advance to the April general election. There's also five other aldermanic wards, but the incumbent is either unopposed or has just one opponent, and after a 2023 law was signed, that eliminated the need for a primary when that's the case.
Let's focus first on the mayor's race.
So this is one where incumbent Deshara Jones has three challengers, 8th Ward Alderwoman Kara Spencer, Recorder of Deeds Michael Butler, and retired utility executive Andrew Jones. Deshara Jones wants voters to give her another term to finish the work that she started. She says the problems the city faces take a lot to fix. Here she is making that case on an episode of Politically Speaking in January.
We have to make sure that we are enacting long-lasting, sustainable change, and oftentimes that takes more than 4 years.
So that's Deshara Jones' argument for re-election. How about the messages from her opponents?
Kara Spencer and Michael Butler are both focusing on the need for the city to do the basics better, things like paving the roads or picking up the trash. And that argument's been bolstered by the city's response to a January winter storm. Here is the perspective that Butler offered in his episode of Politically Speaking.
It seemed that the city government wasn't interested in doing side streets and providing the service that most citizens were asking for.
And the mayor did later admit that the city did not adjust its normal snow response quickly enough. Spencer has been the candidate to take the most direct aim at Mayor Jones. While Spencer backed the incumbent as a second choice for her supporters back in 2021, she said on an episode of Politically Speaking that the mayor has not delivered on those promises.
To see a stated set of values versus an enacted set of policies and procedures has played out very differently than I think we all anticipated.
And that final candidate, Andrew Jones, emphasizes his business experience. Here he is on Politically Speaking.
My Rolodex is absolutely critical to make sure that we can transcend some of the issues that are going on.
So that's the mayor's race. There's also comptroller, another citywide office, essentially the chief financial officer of the city.
That is correct.
Talk a little bit about that race.
So this is an interesting one. Incumbent Darlene Green has run either unopposed or with what I would call token opposition in all 8 of her elections. She's been in office for nearly 30 years, and she says that experience has saved the city money. She knows all the ins and outs of the city's books, and that meant she knew to stop payments to building division contractors who were under investigation, for example. And she likes to tout the increase in the city's credit rating that makes it cheaper for the city to borrow money. But her challengers say 30 years in office is more than enough. Former alderwoman and state representative Donna Berenger says she read through the budget and audits during COVID and started to see a lot of things that bothered her, like a lack of clear accounting for federal ARPA dollars. And Celeste Metcalf is a CPA who's done some contract work for city offices. She says that showed her some of the problems with the city's accounting structure and that she was motivated to run for office by reports the city wasn't paying its bills.
Finally, Rachel, what about those aldermanic races?
There's two contested primaries. One of them is in the 3rd Ward, which is in southeast St. Louis, that's centered around the Dutchtown neighborhood. Incumbent Shane Cohn is one of the most senior aldermen at the board, and both his challengers, Inez Bordeaux and Dallas Adams, say it's time for a change. Cohn says that experience makes him the most equipped to address the needs of the ward. Bordeaux wants the city to focus on poverty, and Adams would turn her attention to equitable development. In the 11th Ward, incumbent Laura Keyes faces Rebecca McLeod and Melinda Long. All three women are focused on bringing new business to the ward, and this is a big one. It stretches from Fairground Park in the north to down near Slough Hospital in the south.
Really important election here for city residents. Early voting began February 18th. How's turnout so far?
It's pretty low. According to the St. Louis Board of Election Commissioners, as of about 2:45 on February 26, just 3,200 people had voted at one of the 7 early voting locations.
For context, about 5,000 people voted on the first day of early no-excuse absentee voting for the November election.
Yeah, and turnout in the city election in 2021 for the March primary was about 20%.
Voting matters, and this information matters, too. Thank you for bringing it to us, Rachel Lippman.
Abby Lirico, thank you.
The municipal primary is tomorrow in St. Louis. Our voter guide can be found at stlpr.org. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Theme music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Lirico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.